At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And tonight we have kind of a dynamic show for you, some stuff happening at the last minute. And so we're going to have fun putting it together. State Representative Garnett Coleman will be talking to us over the phone about the Harris County Commissioner's Court meeting today, which was held to discuss the fire last week that destroyed the county voting machines. Then, although no one challenged the incumbent in the Democratic Party in the primary in Congressional District 7, someone has stepped up to challenge for the seat as a write-in candidate. Lisa Squires will be here to talk about it. On NewsWrap, former Republican National Committee Chair Ken Melman admitted last week in Atlantic Magazine that he is gay. This after being one of the architects of the 2004 Bush campaign's anti-gay strategy. And New York City offers civil unions but not same-sex marriage, so that council is set to vote on a proposal that would require the city clerk to inform same-sex couples seeking marriage where they can go to get the real thing. And then that's going to be followed at the top of the hour by the founder of the Fort Bend GLBT Political Caucus, Fiona Dawson. Then Gary Greer will be here to tell us about what it was like at this year's Gay Games in Cologne, Germany, and some important news for the city of Houston. Houston has been selected to host the 2011 NAGVA National Championship Volleyball Tournament. And that's followed by the feature segments from This Way Out, which tonight looks at New York City's big gay ice cream truck and Audiophile with J.D. Doyle. And like I said, we're going to have fun putting this thing together because there's some stuff happening right at the last minute.
Oh, absolutely. This is Queer Voices. Hey, don't forget that this coming Saturday is Queer Bingo.
Yes.
My favorite place to be.
And where is it at?
It's going to be at One's a Meal on the second floor, and it begins at 4:30.
That's on Westheimer, just a little bit east of Montrose, on the north side of the street.
And, of course, the other events coming up at the community center this week, you have tonight, of course, is not tonight, it's on the first and the third Mondays, is coming out. Support group for those who haven't made it out yet that are having difficulty with parents and friends and whomever. Also, on September the 2nd, is World AIDS Day planning at the center, so be part of that. And then, of course, on Thursday the 2nd is the center's HIV support group.
And you can send us some of your group's information, and we'll try to get it on the air. You can do that info@queervoices.org. That will put it right into our mailbox, and we'll be able to announce some of that stuff. Or if you'd like to come on the show, you can use the same email address to let us know that we can schedule you. Usually we try to schedule about at least 3 or 4 weeks in advance. So if you have something coming up, let us know. Very interesting. Garnett Coleman's on the line with us now. And Garnett, I'm just wondering, now that I just became a precinct judge here in 34, was this done on my account?
Say that again.
I just become precinct judge here in the Montrose at Precinct 34, and I don't know if I'll have a chance to be able to be precinct judge.
Oh, you'll have a chance to be precinct judge. The real issue is, what impact,
yes,
will it have on, will this fire and destruction of machines have on voters' opportunity to vote? And that's always of concern when a few thousand votes can change the result of an election.
Well, let's briefly recap here. On Friday evening, or was it Saturday morning, or Thursday evening, Friday morning, there was a fire at the warehouse where they stored all of the election machines in Harris County, which surprises me that they'd all be in one place.
It does me as well. And you know, usually just like banks have redundancy, you know, so that you couldn't lose everything. And I'm just surprised that, first of all, there wasn't a fire alarm or system that alerted someone, just like somebody has in their home, you know, a security system that also worked for fire. I understand that there were sprinklers, but they didn't, obviously they didn't go off. This is just a strange coincidence.
Well, the thing is that, this is Jennifer, the thing is that you would have expected there be the kind of security, consider these are our voting machines, and along with that kind of security, assuming it was there, there would be some, at least a smoke alarm.
Well, right. I mean, it really is troubling that particularly electronic machines were not secured better than they were, and with the attention to the fact that these are not mechanical machines, these have hard drives. You wouldn't store a whole bunch of computers like that. So these are really just, you know, very small computers.
Well, and two, I you have to turn on a regular computer periodically or it will, in fact, have problems. The moisture down here causes
exactly.
problems to your home desktop computer or laptop. And you have to turn it on just so it'll work properly on a regular basis. But this, the humidity, dust, all of these things cause problems. And then we have problems anyway with some of the machines during a regular voting period.
So the machines are gone, and you were at Commissioner's Court today, and I'm sure you've been involved in this since the fire of watching what was going on. Do you think this was the right response to try to buy up to a quarter new machines? Where do you think we should have gone, and then how do we deal with it?
Well, first, whatever process is being used one way or another, it should be monitored. And because at the last minute, we shouldn't be told, oh, well, we can't get all the machines we need. Or, gee, we got these machines from this other county, but they don't work.
Right.
Or the fact that, gee, isn't it election day just about everywhere in the country on that day? And don't those folks need to use their own machine? So there's some things that need to be looked at as we move through this, whether you buy machines or whatever the case may be, even having different methods of voting can be an issue. So I really believe that's the reason why we sent a letter to the Justice Department today, asking them to oversee this process to make sure that under the Voting Rights Act in particular, that no one's disenfranchised.
Well, Garnett, this is because of all of the judges that are running, the size of the ballot itself is a bit daunting. And with the electronic machines, it was still going to take anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes if you knew who you were voting for. So any variation of what we had could take considerably longer. I mean, do we have that capacity to do something else?
Well, and again, I'm one of these folks that I don't want to cast dispersions before, you know, we've moved through this. And that's the reason for asking the Justice Department to look at it. Because what we want to make sure is that there is capacity to do that. In no way has someone's ability to vote been harmed so that they can't cast a good ballot. And that's an issue, particularly with voter suppression. I think, you know, folks don't think about it, but 1,000 to 2,000 votes in a county can swing an election. In a state rep district, it could be 100 votes, 8 votes, 10 votes. And so it does matter if votes are counted and there are enough machines or that precincts aren't consolidated.
Well, and also the fact that Harris County may have a large percentage of any other county voting for governor this year, and there's, you know, there's a favorite son in Harris County.
Well, that's true. You know, and again, Harris County always matters because we are the largest county. And correct, with Bill White on the ballot, this is an important county for him. But there is an important county in terms of who sits on the bench. And also, as a member of the legislature,
yes.
Like I said, 10 votes, 100 votes can change be the difference in a state rep election. When Hubert Bow was first elected, he won by 16 votes.
Exactly. And
Boris Miles. I mean,
Boris Miles, 8 votes.
And also, next year we'll be doing reapportionment.
Correct. So who's in the legislature makes a difference. Who makes a difference, and who sits on the bench, and when people are being either adjudicated or having in a civil situation, and people forget that it's always a small number of votes that separates a win and a loss. Swing 10 votes one way or another in a state rep district that determines who wins. In a county, it's just several thousand, quite frankly, in the final analysis.
Garnett, we've been talking about the problem not having the machines. What came out of the county commissioners meeting concerning what are their suggestions to resolve this?
Well, the suggestion from Beverly Kaufman, who made the presentation, was that they buy as many machines from Hart InterCivic that they can buy that can be done manufactured in time, and to use different methods of voting, moving potentially to paper ballots in some places, and also borrowing, as I said, or leasing or borrowing machines from other jurisdictions. Now, what they approved today, quite frankly, was money to do these things, not the method of how it's to be done. And that's something that we all have to keep in mind.
So this is really left up to Beverly Kaufman to make that final determination on how this is resolved?
Well, she laid out what her plan was.
Okay.
But that wasn't what was voted on. And so, yes, it is left to Beverly Kaufman to execute the plan that she laid out. And it's important that any of us, and this is a public policy issue for me, and for my constituents, and for the like constituents and all the people in Harris County, that they're sure that their vote counts. People don't think about it, but if there's a long line at 6:55, people don't stay in line. Oh, they
right.
They go home.
Yeah, I work the polls and have for many years, and I'm standing out there at 7 o'clock. And if there's a long line, you see people drive up slowly, and then they just turn around and keep on going.
That's right. And so, you know, the lost votes again when it comes to a small number of votes. That's why I think that, for example, you get machines from county Y. Let's just say. And then all of a sudden you go to plug them in and make them work if they're electronic machines, and they don't work.
Exactly, right.
And so somebody says, well, we weren't intending on consolidating precincts or doing anything. We wanted to have enough voting machines, but we flipped the switch and they didn't work.
Exactly.
Well, that's not acceptable.
Right.
So I think that's the reason why we have to be vigilant. I believe that the Justice Department ought to look at this and say what is an acceptable plan, basically pre-clearing the voting systems for Harris County to make sure that it turns out to be fair, and also looking at the voting machines themselves to make sure that those machines are easily used by everyone. But I think before that even happens, that there'll be other plans proposed, as to how to solve this problem. It's not just what is presented by Beverly Kaufman. I think we have a responsibility to propose a solution.
Right. I also heard that these machines that were burnt down were supposed to be replaced in the next year or so. So all of a sudden we're spending $13 million right now to buy these same type of machines that may only, you know, be used another year or so.
Well, like I said, again, it's not the best of circumstances.
Right, right.
These are you know, really bad circumstances. The money, democracy, in my opinion, if we had to spend $50 million, quite frankly, to make sure that people have the access to vote is extremely important, because we choose our leaders at the ballot box, and there's nothing more important than the integrity of that ballot box, whatever form it takes. The other thing is, yeah, sure, somebody's going to make money. People always make money. But the vote is priceless.
Absolutely. Garnett, thank you for joining us. And, you know, certainly we'll be keeping everybody up to date on this. There might be a real push for people to early vote so that it might, you know, make the lines a little bit less on Election Day.
And I think that's appropriate. I do believe that early voting hours should be extended or days to make sure that...
Can they do that?
And state law, I believe, says you can. I got to look at it again because,
right,
you know, there was a change in that. At least the times, you know, instead of closing down at 4... you know, maybe staying open till 7, so
right,
we have to see if the law allows that. I'm not sure at this point if it does, but if it does, that's what we should do.
Do you have any idea when we'll hear from the Justice Department?
No, we sent a letter in today. The Harris County delegation of state senators and state reps who happen to be Democrats sent a letter asking the Justice Department to oversee and to look into this circumstance, and we have not heard back. Obviously, they just got it today.
Okay.
And we presented that letter to Commissioner's Court as a part of the record for the meeting today.
All right. Thank you very much, Garnett. We've been speaking with State Representative Garnett Coleman concerning the fire at the in the warehouse that burned up the voting machines here in Harris County.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you, Garnett.
Thank you all very much for informing folks. Thanks.
Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. I don't want to think about unless it's with a girl, Patty Smith or Joan Jett. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. I don't want to think about her in bed. Unless it's with a girl, Patty Smith or Joan Jett. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. Chrissy has bravado and it gives her class. Plus you always know that she can kick your ass. Boys don't want to get her and it makes her sneer. Every dyke who sees her gonna pray she's queer. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. I don't want to think about her in bed. Unless it's with a girl, Patty Smith or Joan Jett. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. We had the Ramones and the New York Dolls. Sex Pistols and the Clash, but they all had balls. Them girls with attitudes were too far and too few. But they showed us wannabes that we had something to prove. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. I don't want to think about her in bed. Unless it's with a girl, Patty Smith or Joan Jett. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. She could play so precious on the rhythm guitar. On the stage, on the screen, in the video bar. Move over, Sidney Johnny, better stop your sob. You should never send a man to do a woman's job. Unless it's with a girl, Patty Smith or Joan Jett. Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head. In her red leather jacket and her tight black jeans, she's a punk rock goddess, she's a bad girl queen. Even if I never get to take her to bed, Chrissy Hine is a lesbian in my head.
The name of the song, Chrissy Hyde is a Lesbian in My Head. The name of the artist, Out Late. Yeah, the artist's name is Out Late. And the name of the album is Out Late. And that was released in 2010, this year, and our thanks to J.D. Doyle for bringing that to us. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Jack Falinski.
And we have a guest in the studio here, Lisa Squires. She is a candidate.
She's brave.
She's that too, courageous. Courageous, brave. Candidate for Congressional District 7, the one I live in, by the way, and represented by a reactionary,
Tea Party.
I know. Yes, Tea Partier, Tea Bagger. Well, never mind. That's a whole different story. Anyway, Lisa's here. Lisa has stood up courageously and said no. No one should go unchallenged. And so welcome to you this evening.
Thank
well,
you.
And there was no Democrat running that decided to run this time.
Correct.
Against John Culberson.
Correct.
So you decided to step up, and you're going to be writing candidates.
Yes, I am. I did indeed.
You can get a little closer.
All righty.
So tell us a little bit about your background. Why are you interested in running?
Well, I am a native Houstonian, and when I heard that there were several uncontested seats, I was very surprised. And so when I saw that it wasn't just Culberson, it was Louis Gohmert and Ted Poe and several others, I couldn't really understand how could it be a fair election with that many of our congressional representatives having no one else, having no one running against them. How is that an election? So...
Now,
said,
2 years ago, it was where we thought we had a good chance, or there was a feeling because of the presidential election, Obama, and there was a lot of money spent on the Democratic Party. It still didn't work. So how do you think, and there's an uphill battle of doing the write-in candidate, let's be honest, right?
Right.
Well, of course, if we have the machines like we used to have, it's tough to do that because you have to actually spin the wheel and spell the name
right.
Almost exactly
right.
For them to accept it.
Right, and if they do still have the machines that style, well, in any case, the write-in candidates will be there on the wall with you in the booth.
Okay.
So all write-in candidates, the judge puts them on a list and puts that they're in the booth with you. So that helps on the spelling. But yes, as far as, the people have run in the past, obviously, for the past three times. My quip on this is that we sent a guy in a suit, and this time we're going to send a girl in a dress. So, you know, the three times previously, I think... women run a little bit of a different campaign. We have a little bit of a different approach. And so I hope to maybe reach people a little bit differently.
And what are some of the issues you stand on?
Well, I've been working this year with the Children's Defense Fund and the American Leadership Forum. They have a thing that they put together called Dismantling the Cradle to Prison Pipeline. And it's a report of solutions for our area that shows us what we can do to stop the problem of... children not graduating, teen pregnancy, illiteracy, youth incarceration, all those things go together, and how much money they cost us, how much has taxpayers that cost us, how many lives that cost us. So I've been working with those groups, and we've had some events at local venues and presented the information to the public to help families. I've also been speaking at city council on something that I feel very, very strongly about. I actually get a little angry about, and that is the payday lending stores, because Texas has more payday lending stores than we have Starbucks or McDonald's, and it takes $4 billion out of our state from our families. They go out, you know, these are fees that are just wasted. So that's something I feel very strongly about doing something about. Other states have gotten rid of them.
The payday lending, that's basic for those that might not know what that is. That's mm-hmm. where if you've got a paycheck coming, you can get money in advance on your paycheck after you've made the necessary arrangements. And the fees are fairly exorbitant.
They are exorbitant, and the way that they get around, it is actually usury, but the way they get around it is they call it fees. And the other way they get around it is Governor Perry was kind enough to handpick as our regulatory agency person for the state of Texas, that man is the CEO of a payday lending company. So even though Arkansas and other states have gotten rid of these companies because they are predatory and usurious, we can't, because the person that makes that decision for our entire state actually owns payday lending stores.
No conflict of interest there.
No,
huh?
No,
well,
none
at
all.
He's an honorable person, I'm sure. Mr. Goodhair.
Now you're running on a federal level. So does federal regulations have anything to do with payday lending, or is that a state institution?
They tried in the financial reforms that were just done, and another fine gentleman, I'm sure, from Tennessee, I believe his name was Corker, he stepped in and took that out of the regulatory reforms that were done. So, yes, the federal government has tried. They especially have put in something for our military personnel, because that has become a really bad problem on the military bases.
I bet it does.
Yes. Yes, and you usually pay between 400% and 800% interest rate on these loans. It's you can't get out of them. I know a lot of people come up to me at the meetings that I go to.
I thought that was loan sharking.
It is, but they call it fees, so they get away with it, and we can't get any changes made because the man that makes the decision for us, the whole state, he benefits from these companies he owns.
How could you affect, if elected, how would you affect that?
I would be another Democratic vote for the reform in the financial reform. The reason the guy from Tennessee was able to pull it out was because they were trying to get enough votes, and it was some, you know, deal-making kind of thing. So to get what they wanted in the financial reform, they let that go. Well, I'll be one more Democratic vote, and Culberson will be one less, so we won't need Mr. Corker from Tennessee.
What other issues are really important to you?
Well, I just got through reading the GOP 2010 platform. And
here in the state or national?
The here in the state. But I think they're probably pretty much the same, because it's talking about federal stuff. They want to get rid of, there's just so many things, Social Security and the Endangered Species Act and
EPA.
Oh, yes, there's a long list. And so really what I feel strongly about is this confusing direction that the country is taking. Half of their 25-page platforms is things they want to make changes to the Constitution to get what they want. And then the other half of the 25 pages is things that they want to take away because we're violating the Constitution. And the things they want to take away are all the social services and all the things that help people, including the Employee Non-Discrimination Act,
mm-hmm.
Civil
Rights Act of 1964.
Yes, and they don't support Planned Parenthood at all. They don't support arts at all. They want to end, one of the things that's in the platform this year is they want to end the Department of Education. They would get rid of it. So I don't understand where all this is taking the country, and we need another Democratic vote in Washington.
What's your campaign strategy? How are you trying to, I mean, this is Congressional District 7 is a, Montrose is part of it, but mostly it is a heavily Republican district.
You know, I've lived here all my life, and I've got family all over the city, and so I'm reaching out. I'm getting, you know, my signs ramped up, and mostly it's just a door-to-door grassroots people I know. My slogan is, everyone is different, and everyone matters. So none of this exclusionary, keeping people out, keeping people separate. I feel like the things that I'm talking about, like payday lending and juvenile justice, are issues that all people can relate to, that all moms can relate to. And these aren't really Democratic or Republican issues. I think that people that are ready for a change, that hear my ideas, that see me in the League of Women Voters Guide, or that see me next month at the event that they're having at the George R. Brown for the Candidates Expo, all these things, people will see what I stand for. And if they don't write me in, they have to keep him. So that's the thing, the neat thing about this election, is that he's the only one there on the ticket. It's almost as though people didn't have a choice or don't have a choice. And now they do. And so that's part of what I'm telling people. You have a choice. You don't have to automatically give this guy a job. You can send someone there that believes in what you believe in.
Now, there's especially here in Texas, and we've heard a lot of demagoguing around the immigration issue. And on your website, you talk about having fair immigration.
Yes.
What does fair immigration look like?
To me, it does mean making our There's such an income disparity between, for example, Mexico and the United States, and it's a horrific process of human trafficking that brings people here. I mean, it's some kind of myth that just a few guys from right across the border are walking in. It's people coming from way down in Central and South America, and they're coming far to get here, and it's a form of human trafficking. So we have to take away that incentive. And then for people that are here, we have to make some kind of a plan that they can become citizens. They should pay whatever fees or fines they should have to pay. They should, you know, fit into society, those kinds of things. But we can't just throw everyone out, and we can't have children with no parents. So it's a process, and I think that a lot of good plans have already been offered, and we can look at those and make some kind of comprehensive plan that allows for the people that are here to have some kind of process with their children, and that allows for people who want to come to have a fair process.
Well, you are listening to KPFT, and we're talking to Lisa Squires, who is a write-in candidate for Congressional District 7. We here at KPFT are a nonprofit organization, and we do not endorse any candidates, but we do invite open discussion of the issues by the candidates and by the public.
One of the other things I saw on your website was that you want to have a program where all students graduate.
Right.
Now, when we talk about all students, I'm assuming K through 12, is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about college too?
Well, I mean, I think if our majority of our students did graduate from high school, then if they wanted to go on to college, then they would be able to. What's going on right now is that only half of our children in the area graduate, and if you're a Hispanic or an African American, it's somewhere in the 30 or 40%, depending on if you're male or female. Yeah. So we have a horrible percentage of our population, and Texas is the lowest in so many of those statistics.
Now, education and graduation, that's a local school district issue.
Mm-hmm.
How can you, from Congress, affect this, the local graduation rate?
Well, for one thing, apparently if the GOP platform is passed, they're going to abolish the Department of Education. So that'd be one thing. I would keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would improve on what we do have. The overemphasis on testing is not good. And the No Child Left Behind has not worked. So we have teachers that know how to teach well. My kids went to HISD. We had some teachers that were very, very good. They were innovative. They worked with the children. They motivated the children. In the same school, right behind them, another child of mine, because I have a son and a daughter, would have a terrible teacher. And every mother here and every father here that has in Houston that has children knows that there are teachers that aren't good teachers. So I would work with the current administration and the plans that they have to do education reform. There's good ideas. And then here in the Houston area, we already know from the Children's Defense Fund and other groups that have studied that there are things that we can change that will help these kids graduate. So I'm willing to work. I want to work with local groups and find out what we need and then take that back to Washington.
Well, does that go along with your other statements you want to stop illiteracy? Is that all part of that whole
That all
plan?
Goes together, and it goes with teenage pregnancy and drug use, and all of those kinds of things fit together. So, for example, if you are a small child and you have more than a few of these factors, which are in a home with no health care, mental health problems, violence, poverty, illiteracy, teen pregnancy, if you are that child, you have something like an 80 or 90% chance then of ending up in jail before you even graduate from high school. Well, then that costs us $67,000 a year in Texas for a child to be kept in the youth incarceration system. HISD only costs $22,000 a year, and these are round numbers. Don't hold me to the exact amounts, but that's approximate. So it hurts us. It hurts the families. It hurts the children, and it costs us dearly. So these things can be changed. It's not hard. These are not hard things to change.
Well, and I think I read recently that we're like now 15th in education, and I may not have...
In the world?
Yes,
the U.S. is now 11th and 15th in a lot of those main... not in the top 10 anymore in most of those things. And then Texas is 50th in so many of those categories. It's just shameful, and it's not necessary, and we deserve more, and we're capable of more as Texans, as Houstonians, you know, and that's what I have on my website. We have that Texas pride, and we have that Houston pride. So our kids can do this, and we as people can work together. And so that's why those are the kinds of things that I have on my website, that what if we made people our foundation? You know, what if we made humanity our goal? What if we came together as community instead of being divisive?
Now, of course, in our community, we have a couple of concerns about education. Besides the fact that I think most of us want good education, but there's also the concern about anti-bullying. There's also the concern about, you know, GLBT students should be able to feel comfortable at school. And that's not always, you know, especially when you look at some of the smaller schools or the rural schools, non-urban schools.
That's not addressed. Right. And so many of the new and innovative programs that we have are more hands-on with the teachers and the students, where they form smaller groups and work together one-on-one. And when you can see what's going on and children aren't fitting in, I know it's kind of an odd reference, but I really like that new show that's on MTV that says it's about If You Really Knew Me. And the kids all talk to each other. So the cheerleaders talk to the nerds, and the jocks talk to the, you know, the guys that don't fit in. And they all talk about how really deep down inside they're all insecure, they're all afraid, they all worry that they're not going to fit in, and then they all cry and hug and they talk about, if you really knew how I was. So I think that when it comes down to it, and that's the point on my, you know, on my slogan, is that everyone is different, but everyone matters. And so when you can work together that way. And sadly enough, I noticed, again, to bring up something negative, but on the GOP platform, they talk about not enforcing the hate crimes for GLBT. So, I mean, I don't even understand some of the kinds of things that they say, and I might be misreading it. This is like an aside.
You're not.
But I think what it says is they would take children away from couples, which would mean that Mayor Parker would lose her children. I mean, I don't know. I can't even go there because it's too
really
confusing.
As a student of their platform, which I share on the air occasionally, no, you're absolutely right. That is what it means.
Mm.
As a minister, if I should marry a same-sex couple, if the Republicans had their way, that's a felon.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I could go to jail.
That.
I could marry all those people.
I'll come
in prison,
see you
in prison. Yeah. One last item that I was very questioned on there was the middle class expansion.
Yes, our middle class is gone.
I want to be expanded into the middle class.
Yeah, well, we don't have a middle class anymore. We have the 90% that are the kind of the plantation economy, and we have the 10% that are the elite, and that's the government and corporate elite. So our middle class needs to come back. I think we made a big mistake when we started thinking that our houses were some kind of a, you know, something we would just trade on the market and keep trading up. We bought into that myth, and we bought into the myth that we should all be in Wall Street and put our retirement funds in there. Well, none of that worked, you know, and so what we have now is the 10% that rules everything and the 90% of us that barely get by every day. So we have to bring the middle class back, and that comes from taking back the power from the corporations and from the elite within the government that don't hear what it is that we need.
Now, that has to do, the way the middle class expanded was during the 50s and 60s, where the manufacturing base paid good wages to the workers. Now, a lot of that stuff's been sent overseas now.
Well, and also,
how can we do something about that?
Also, the way that expansion happened was that all the men coming home from the war all went to college. That was the biggest group of educated people that we've ever had, because all of those men went to school on the GI Bill when they got back. And then they were able to buy the houses and have the jobs and provide the families, which all of us kind of grew up during that time. We are the results of those people, and now we don't have those opportunities. So
college is so expensive now.
Well, and everything is, and it's this. I think there's two different things going on. We see that the people at the upper ends of society game everything. Everything is gamed. Everything is churned and turned over, and you take advantage and you take as much as you can. And so now that mentality has trickled down, so that even on our social services, we have people who take advantage and game the system. So I think from all ends, we all need to take personal responsibility and accountability. Hold the corporations accountable. None of those people are in jail, like Bernie Madoff, because he was the worst one, you know. But we have to hold those people accountable for all that they've taken from us. I like, there's a lady that's running for attorney general. She's talking about suing Wall Street because, for example, American General is based here out of Houston or has an office here. They took teachers' retirement fund money and put it in Wall Street and then lost it. All right, so the teacher's retirement fund is lower. Well, they gave us that advice. They took that money and they did it. Therefore, they have to be accountable. So we've lost that. And then at the social level, using food stamps wrong or cheating on your Medicaid or any of those kinds of things, we all have to be accountable for our kids, for our schools, for all of that. And if we all step up and we all step together and we hold the people at the higher ends accountable too, it can all come together. We can stop some of these problems that we have. It's systemic. They all feed off each other. All these problems feed off each other.
Well, one of the things that the came out in one of the studies was that about 60, and again, I'm rounding this off, $60 billion a year are lost in Medicaid fraud.
Sure. Everyone's taught to game the system because people can barely get by. And we see it being done at the upper levels. And, on the one hand, we say these people are our leaders, and so therefore I think that people follow their example, right? And then on the other hand, you say, well, it's personal responsibility, and don't do what they do. You should take care of your own self. I still say that when the corporations are acting as badly as they are, that then people will do the same thing because they see that that's what's popular and what's accepted. And it's just going on in too many levels. And we have to stop it on all the levels. We all have to step up. We all have to come back together as a community. A lot of things. And I think Obama started a lot of that when he brought back how much pride there is for America now. Because, you know, in the time before that, we got to where we were practically hated by how badly we've been acting. Our bad behavior in the economy has affected the whole world economy. Our bad behavior with our military has affected so many other people in the world. And you know, the day of the election, they showed people in every country crying and screaming and laughing and jumping up and down in just sheer joy at the change he was bringing. So I think the right direction is there, and I think people want that change, and I think we just have to stay with it.
If you wanted to hear in the last minute, if you had one message you wanted to get out to the people who are listening, other than your website and stuff like that, what would it be?
Well, it's that in the upcoming election, you will hear a lot of different things. And one of them, of course, now with the machines being gone, is that it's going to be complicated or take a long time to vote. The other is that write-in candidates can't win or this is too hard to do. And I say that we can figure it out. People can write me in and get me, in the election, and they will have a choice. And then, I guess the most important thing is that we realize what we want to do as citizens here in Houston, how we can come together and how we can make a long-term difference, because I think so many of our practices are not sustainable. We don't pay sustainable wages to people. We don't use sustainable products. We don't have sustainable practices. And in long-term, what is that for our children and our economy and ourselves 20, 30, 50 years from now? I don't think we think long-term. So I think that it's time for a new approach, and I have a lot of good ideas. And my ideas are not about what the problem is, it's about what the solution, and the solutions for everybody, how we can all work together and move forward.
If somebody wants to get in touch with you and find out more about you, what's your website?
It is wendistrict7.com.
Telephone numbers or anything like that? That's how you want to...
No, yeah. If you just go to windistrict7.com, you'll see me. You can also text wind7 to 88202, and you will get a text back from me that will give you information about the website. That way you don't have to remember it. So again, if you text WIN7 to 88202, you'll get a text back. I'll be at the George R. Brown next month at the event, the Candidates Expo, that the engineers and the League of Women Voters is putting on. And there's other things coming up. I'll put those on my website.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Lisa Squires, who is the write-in candidate for Congressional District 7. And this is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 28th, 2010. The results of Australia's national elections on August 21st appear to have been generally good for LGBT people and their allies. While the final tally is still somewhat in flux, the minority Green Party, which supports marriage equality, made significant gains. Their surge was highlighted by the historic victory of Adam Bandt in Melbourne, who became the first ever Green Party candidate to win election to the House of Representatives in what was, for more than 100 years, considered to be a safe seat for Labour. Both Prime Minister Julia Gillard of the currently ruling Labour Party and her right-of-centre Liberal Party rival Tony Abbott, who now leads the opposition coalition, have staunchly opposed opening marriage to same-gender couples.
In what most predict will be a hung parliament, where neither Labour nor Liberals would hold a majority, the victorious party must be able to round up at least 76 supportive seats in Parliament to form a new government. The Greens' new Melbourne MP, Adam Bandt, has indicated that he favours Labour. Equality supportive independent Andrew Wilkie, who's projected to win in Tasmania, is also considered, along with Bant, to be among the four independent or minority party representatives that the BBC says will be kingmakers in the formation of a new government.
39 votes are required for a bill to pass in the Senate. Australian Broadcasting Corporation elections analyst Anthony Green predicts that there'll be 34 Liberal-affiliated, 31 Labour, 9 Green, and 2 independent senators in that body. Openly gay Greens leader Bob Brown has promised his party's introduction of a marriage equality bill in the upcoming legislative session. He's urged the two major parties to allow a conscience vote on the issue for their MPs, which Brown says would lead to almost certain passage.
Alex Greenwich of the national group Australian Marriage Equality said the Greens' unwavering support for that issue was part of the reason the party made gains at the polling booths. The overall national swing away from the Labour Party to the Greens is partly because Labour betrayed its own principles by opposing marriage equality. Greenwich told the Sydney Star Observer, "The Greens have been the only party representing the 60% of Australians who support marriage equality."
In other political news, U.S. President George W. Bush's 2004 elections campaign manager and former Republican National Committee chairman Ken Mellman came out as gay in an interview with The Atlantic magazine this week. He told writer Mark Ambinder that it's taken me 43 years to get comfortable with this part of my life. The process has been something that's made me a happier and better person. It's something I wish I had done years ago. So do many LGBT activists. Mellman served as White House political director in the Bush administration and, with chief strategist Karl Rove, whose father was reportedly gay, managed Bush's 2004 re-election campaign. It specifically pushed ballot measures in 11 states to outlaw marriage equality as a way to bring conservative voters to the polls and help Bush's re-election bid.
Mellman said he wanted to come out publicly now to become an advocate for gay marriage. He's co-chairing a fundraising event in late September for the American Foundation for Equal Rights, the group that's paying for the legal challenge to California's marriage equality banning Proposition 8. Responding to the outrage over his political past voiced by some gay commentators and even by Jon Stewart on Comedy Central's The Daily Show.
So former White House political director Ken Mellman, the man charged with formulating the GOP's anti-gay rights policy for much of the past decade, likes dudes. Oh, and by the way, fellas, he's hypocritical.
Mellman said, "I understand that folks are angry. I don't know that you can change the past. I can only try to be helpful in the future." Comments from high-profile Republican or Democratic politicos have been few and far between, but of course the far right can always be counted on. Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage, accused Mellman of abdicating core Republican beliefs. Tony Perkins, who leads the Family Research Council, said Mellman's announcement helped explain the scandalous failure of the Republican establishment to fight same-gender marriage. But Clark Cooper, executive director of the predominantly gay Log Cabin Republicans, said that, "As a fellow Bush alumnus, I also look forward to Ken helping me and our colleagues build a stronger, more inclusive Republican Party. Being gay and being conservative are not mutually exclusive."
Tory MP and Cabinet Minister Crispin Blunt underscored that idea in the UK this week by announcing that he was ending his 20-year marriage and coming out as a gay man. His office released a statement saying that there is no third-party involvement, but this is difficult for his immediate and wider family, and he hopes for understanding and support for them, and that their privacy will be respected. Blunt and his wife Victoria married in 1990, and they're the parents of a son and daughter. The conservative politician currently serves the coalition government as Minister of Prisons, with responsibility for penal policy and related budget matters. He has a spotty at best voting record on LGBT issues as an MP, including votes against equalizing the sexual age of consent and opening adoption to same-gender couples. He also voted for a bill to make it harder for lesbian couples to access fertility treatment. He did, however, vote for a sexual orientation anti-discrimination measure and the Civil Partnerships Bill. A member of Blunt's constituency party told the BBC that it's a bit of a shock, we didn't know in advance, but everyone in the local party likes him, and it's a courageous thing to do. It's really a private matter for him.
In this week's Don't Ask, Don't Tell news back in the U.S., a 44-question survey about repealing the policy banning service by open gays and lesbians was sent to some 150,000 military spouses this week. It's part of the Pentagon's study, which will take until December to complete, described as being about how best to implement repeal. A previously distributed survey to about 400,000 active duty service members, reportedly returned by barely one in four, included questions about bunking and showering with fellow soldiers who are openly lesbian or gay. The spouses are being asked if repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell would factor into their mate's reenlistment, if they'd move out if a gay or lesbian service member moved onto base facilities with his or her partner, and if the spouse and his/her partner would attend military social events if same-gender partnered personnel would also be there. The lesbi-gay advocacy group Service Members United complained that this survey of military spouses contains many of the same insulting and derogatory assumptions and insinuations about gays and lesbians that ran throughout the last survey. Perhaps in response, the Pentagon's Comprehensive Review Working Group that's conducting the study agreed this week to meet with spouses of gay and lesbian personnel at the Service Members United Military Partners Forum on September 16th. It coincides with the group's lobby day to urge policymakers to lift the ban on lesbians and gay men serving openly in the U.S. military.
Elsewhere in the world, Nepal's only openly gay member of parliament, Sunil Pant, waved rainbow flags in Kathmandu as he rode atop an elephant on August 25th in what was billed as the Himalayan nation's first international LGBT pride parade. It was actually the ninth such parade in the country's capital city, though previous events have attracted far fewer people. Representatives from the U.S. and British embassies and an Irish MP participated this year, joining a singing and dancing crowd estimated in various media reports to have numbered from the high hundreds to low thousands. In a post-parade email, Pant also celebrated foreign participation from India, Japan, Denmark, France, Norway, and Australia. The parade was timed to coincide with the Hindu festival of Gai Jatra, a traditionally colorful event during which men can reportedly dress in female attire. It's officially a Hindu festival honoring the sacred cow, but one local website described it as also being a carnival celebration with practical jokes, akin to Mardi Gras or April Fool's Day. Nepal has become one of the most progressive nations in Asia since its monarchy was overthrown in 2006. 2 years ago, the country's Supreme Court ordered the government to enact laws to guarantee LGBT rights after the advocacy group Blue Diamond Society, led by Pant, filed an anti-discrimination petition. A bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples is currently going through Parliament.
And finally, a marriage equality bill has failed in the New York State Senate more than once in recent years after clearing the Assembly, and with a supportive governor waiting to sign it. But New York courts have ruled that the marriages of gay and lesbian couples legally performed elsewhere must be recognized in the state. Exasperated by the legislature's inability to pass a marriage equality measure, the New York City Council this week ordered clerks to post information telling lesbian and gay couples who seek domestic partnerships, the only form of legal recognition now issued by the state of New York, where they can go to get married. Among the jurisdictions offering civil marriage to same-gender couples is neighboring Connecticut, as well as the other East Coast states of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Under the new measure, the city clerk must post the marriage alternative information on its website and in hard copy form at city marriage bureaus. Openly lesbian City Council Speaker Christine Quinn offered the bill as a combination of creativity and frustration. "We in the city of New York have gone as far as we can go," she said. "We're thinking outside of the box on a regular basis to make sure that all of the families of New York know that they are loved, respected, and supported by the government of the city of New York."
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 28th, 2010. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Falafel for two, it costs under $10. Hey, times are tough, so they go Dutch. Well, he's looking at him, and so is he. And under the table, he can feel his knee. Could this be a chance for a little romance? He walks him down 7th Avenue, but he's too shy to make the first move till he asks if he can give him a kiss. He says, "Sweetie, that's something that I wouldn't miss. I don't mind taking a chance on a little romance." So under the street light, he's kissing his lips, wondering if it's the best place for this. Out the corner of his eye, he sees a couple cops. Maybe just for now, we better stop. It's too much of a chance we're taking for romance. Romance in Brooklyn, catch it while you can. Tomorrow he's flying to Paris and Amsterdam. Romance in Brooklyn, captured only in song. He was just a passer through, but he made him feel that he belonged. Walking down the street, holding hands. Just for tonight, he feels like he's his man. And they're strolling arm in arm through Prospect Park, till they see suspicious characters in the dark. Oh, if only they could find a place to be alone. But he's staying with friends, and his boyfriend's home. So they kiss goodnight and bid adieu. Have to put a lid on what they've brewed, but it's still intact, it's still fresh and new. The mystery of me and the mystery of you. And there's still a chance for romance in Brooklyn.
This is Queer Voices.
So he's holding me in his arms, and he's giving me sweet little kisses, and he's telling me he'll never harm me, and he's whispering how wonderful this is. And I tell him that I love him, and I tell him I'll be true. And I've said these things to other boys, but right now the old words feel so new. And I ask him, how did I get so lucky? I don't know, he says, I'm nothing special, I'm just some guy. And he's smiling like he means it, and he's stretched out on his back, and he's telling me now that he loves me for the fifth or the sixth time. I can't keep track, and I watch his eyes as they shine. Run my fingers through his hair, and I touch his chest where his heart is, and I tell him I find safe haven there. And I ask him, how did you get to be so sweet and so kind?
So sweet and so kind.
I don't know, he says, I'm nothing special, I'm just
Thank you.
The name of that song, Just Some Guy, by Anthony Rapp, from the album Look Around, released in 2000. And before that, Romance in Brooklyn, by Pistol Pete, from his album True Stories, released in 2009. This is Queer Voices.
The only way to have a truly fair election is if everyone votes. Get involved and make your vote count. Ballots for the 2010 local station board were mailed the week of August 15th. A separate mailing that includes information on all the candidates will be mailed the week of August 22nd. Tune in to KPFT every morning from August 23rd to August 27th from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. and hear the candidates speak about their ideas for KPFT. Join us on Sunday, August 29th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. for the first of two community candidate forums. Both will be located at the Houston Institute for Culture at 708C Telephone Road. For more details, go to www.kpft.org. Keep KPFT healthy and thriving. Vote.
Hello, I'm Ruth Nasrullah, and I'm running for KPFT's local station board. KPFT is a vehicle for all communities to have a public voice, and I'm committed to ensuring all those voices are heard. I'm especially hoping to increase participation by Houston's diverse Muslim community, which is underrepresented in mainstream media and often misunderstood by the public. My education and community service background make me well qualified to serve on the board. Since 2007, I have run Light of Islam, a nonprofit educational center and bookstore, which has afforded me firsthand exposure to the challenges and joys of a community-oriented and supported endeavor. I have a master's degree in journalism and write a blog about Muslim life for the Houston Chronicle. KPFT must have representation from all minority communities, and so I am asking for your vote for me, Ruth Nasrullah, for the KPFT Local Station Board.
This candidate statement is property of the author only and not KPFT or Pacifica.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
This is Jennifer Renee.
And Jack Walensky.
And we have here in our studio with us a personal friend of many years now, an activist in the LGBT community, a social as well as political activist in many ways, someone that many of you know, Fiona Dawson. And Fiona has been around, I've known her for many years in my activities with the Human Rights Campaign. But it just seems no matter where I go, and there's a crowd of more than 20 people, somewhere in the crowd, Fiona is there. And that's a good thing. But what's important, and we have her on today, we're going to talk about a number of things, but one important thing is Fiona now lives down in Fort Bend County. And in her endeavor to take the message to Fort Bend County, has been instrumental in forming the Fort Bend GLBT Political Caucus. Welcome, Fiona.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Jack.
Why did you decide to do a political group? Was that the thing that you were really interested in doing, or did you feel that was the thing that needed to be done?
Well, you know what? I volunteered to do this because somebody else asked me to.
Oh.
So, which is why, you know, most people choose to volunteer because they were asked. And Steve Brown, who is the Democratic Party chair for Fort Bend County, found out that I was living in Fort Bend. And when he came on as chairman, he really wanted to get some other caucuses and other groups established. And so word got about that I was in Fort Bend. And so it's like, okay, let's get Fiona to go find the gay in Sugarland.
And there's, if I understand this correctly, the Fort Bend has really sort of organized their Democratic Party.
Yeah, there's been a lot of movement, and studies are showing that it's possible to turn Fort Bend blue, you know, and really make an impact, which a lot of people ask me, or when they find out that I live in Sugarland, and they're like, you know, this face kind of screws up a bit, and I immediately say, it's honestly, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's a quick 25-minute shoot home. But our caucus is actually non-partisan. And so Steve approached me and asked, you know, if I would start the caucus. And of course, I said yes right away, because I'm so enthusiastic about equality.
You're recently a new voter, right?
Well, actually, I got my citizenship in 2008. So, that's still recent, like a couple of years.
Yes.
And became a member of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Yes, did.
I was president,
Thank you very That was a gift, wasn't it? Thank you very much. So I paid this year.
Hey, I'm not president anymore.
So that's really exciting because that we have some really great people on the board, people who are passionate and enthusiastic. We are looking for a couple more board members as well, and I would really love to find people who have experience in Fort Bend politics, because I am new to Fort Bend County, and so getting the lay of the land, I'm a strong advocate for diversity and inclusion.
Well,
so,
and it should be noted that Fort Bend is a very much a growing county.
Yes.
There's a little bit of Houston in Fort Bend County,
yes,
in the northern part of it, but it's a pretty big county in its own right.
It's a huge county, and of course, you know, I'm living in Sugarland, so it's easy for my focus to just be around Sugarland. And, you know, I've been out a few evenings in Sugarland Town Square, and you see the diversity around you. You see people of different races, ages. I was, with my dear friend Robin for dinner the other week, and we walked through the town square and saw couples of different races and ethnicities. And so it's great to see that diversity. And then, of course, you're trying to spot the gays as well. So we had a happy hour this evening, and we had another happy hour a couple of weeks ago. And it's very accepting, and it feels very, very comfortable there. So, I think there's a lot of potential, and we're really excited. But at the same time, we have to remember that this is a new voice in Fort Bend County. To the best of my knowledge, I haven't heard of an LGBT group in that county before. So we have a lot of opportunity here to educate people on why the LGBT community needs a voice. And so we're very determined to strategically and carefully move this group forward. We don't want to rush in there and act like we've been established for 30 years or more, as the Houston caucus has been.
Well, and that's really interesting, because one of the first groups that formed in Houston was at that time the GPC, Gay Political Caucus, and EMCC Church. They were like one of the two basic beginning organizations in the community.
Yes. And so isn't it great that, you know, 30 odd years on, that's what we're doing in Fort Bend. And we have really modeled ourselves after the Houston GLBT caucus in the structure.
Which you had a really good quote.
What was that?
Something about, we took the good parts.
We took the good parts and we're leaving out the drama.
But you're going to have your own drama.
Oh, we're going to have our own type of drama. Thank you very much.
I love that. That's terrific quote. That is so good.
Oh. Well, there's drama wherever you go.
Yes.
Right.
Number one, you can't have a political organization. Number two, you can't have a GLBT organization without the drama.
You've got to have the drama.
I mean, double portions. But our mission is very much the same, and I break it down into three key areas. We exist to do education, to do advocacy, and to do activism. And how do we develop that, and what are we going to do forward? And really, we really feel strongly we want to build a good brand, we want people to respect us, and we want to build a strong membership base so that candidates come seeking our endorsement, and that we have something meaningful to give to them. And so, you know, we really, I have to say, we're just thrilled and honored that Annette Mayor Anise Parker is coming to speak at our very first inaugural event on Sunday, September the 12th. And so, you know,
where is that going to be and what time?
That is going to be at my home and Robin Brown's home in Sugarland. So we would love for our friends in Harris County to come over. And it's Sunday, September 12th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m.
To get more information, where would they go?
Go to our Facebook fan page. Just search Fort Bend LGBT Political Caucus. You'll find that. We haven't launched our website yet, but of course, you know, with Facebook, we can get all the information. We do have an email address as well.
And what's that?
That is FB, so for Fort Bend, FB_political_caucus@yahoo.com.
Now, when the GPC was originally formed, and I guess it was around 1975, there was police beatings.
Yeah.
There was just terrible things that were happening, and it was not that far after Stonewall. Things are a little bit different now. And, you know, the caucus generally sort of specialized in screening candidates and building a database, which
yeah.
back that time was like, you know, having people's names on a list, and you'd have to send out brown paper envelopes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what are some of the basics that you're looking at? I know you're still forming the group and
yeah.
stuff about what you want to do. Do you want to
yeah.
screen candidates? Do you want to just sort of educate the
yeah.
people?
We're in that forming and norming stage. And so I think it's very important to make this sustainable and successful over the long term, which is what we're about. I'm not afraid for us to really take some time to get a great strategy and a good plan for how we're going to move forward. Originally, we were hoping to get some screening and endorsements done this year. However, we really feel that we are not ready yet, you know, and so we would like to focus on our marketing and our messaging and our education. And so we'll have our monthly happy hour socials. As we're nonpartisan, we want to invite all candidates across party lines to come and visit with us and build a base of allies in the county. And so we are also going to have a retreat as a board to be able to come up with a timeline and a work plan for how we want to roll things out. I'm thinking that we could well be doing some screening and endorsements in time for the May elections that will be happening in the county. And then, of course, we recognize that by 2012, I mean, that's going to be a critical year. So I think, and I'm speaking really as an individual right now, the way I envision it is that we could do some screenings and endorsements in May and then really have a good trial run for September 2011 elections. So by the time 2012 comes around, which is going to be really critical, that we're ready and we have a voice and we can make an impact. I don't want us to jump into something too soon because that will hurt us in the long run. And I would rather us not worry too much right now about doing the screenings and endorsements, which are so critical. And because they're so critical, we want to do them right. And so really looking at those three areas of education, activism and advocacy, and how do we put those into action. And I really think that education is a really first step and is a critical step. You know, we need to educate Fort Bend County as to why the LGBT community needs a voice and the areas that we still see discrimination. And we need to send the message to the candidates and our elected officials that we are a community that can put them into office and can keep them there, and we can add something of value and, you know, educate them on how they can help us too.
How has the perception of the people you met so far of forming this organization?
Fabulous. I mean, I light up with excitement when I think about it. I mean, people, the reaction is, you did what? I didn't know there was an LGBT political caucus in Fort Bend County. And it's like, well, you know, there is now. People are really excited, and some people think reaction you get, oh my God, you know, that's very brave, you're going to have a hard time. But it feels like people are just coming out of the woodwork. I hear more positive statements than I do anything else. And oftentimes it's like, oh, I know so-and-so, they're gay and they live in Fort Bend. And, oh, my neighbors are gay. And I mean, there are gay people in Fort Bend County.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes. We're everywhere.
We are. And though, also, we don't want just gay people, because if every gay person got politically active, yes, that would be, we could create some change. But we couldn't ever create all the change we want. We need straight allies. And really, we're looking for human beings who care about equality, specifically with the LGBT community. If every straight person cared about LGBT issues, we wouldn't have issues. And so that is sending the message. And we went for a long time as a board debating on what we should be called. Because originally, of course, we jump in with, okay, we're going to be the Fort Bend LGBT Political Caucus. But then we took some time to debate that and say, actually, should we be Fort Bend Equal Rights Political Caucus or Civil Rights Political Caucus? Because there are pros and cons to that. Because we don't want people to see LGBT and one, either be completely confused and not know who on earth we are, or two, see that and think, oh, I'm not gay, therefore that has nothing to do with me. Because that's not true. You know, if you care about equal rights for anyone, then you have something to give to this group. So we went through a long discussion, as you can imagine, with very heated opinions on either side. And after all of that, you know, we decided what we could not compromise on. We had to have Fort Bend and we had to have political caucus. What were we going to put in the middle? And after this debate, we ended up deciding on what we thought in the first place and kept LGBT. But I'm pleased that we went through that whole process because it really brings up the issue that...
Well, and you're right about that because almost every organization did that too.
Yeah.
But having your people do it, the people that are involved in building it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we were originally called Lesbian and Gay Voices.
Yeah.
And then we just... We didn't know. And we didn't know that we... And nobody's ever complained about queer voices.
Yeah.
But you got to go through that yourselves.
And I think it's interesting that we're LGBT, and of course the Houston is GLBT, and the way that acronym changed cracks me up. I don't really, I don't think there's a definitive reason as to how that happened. And, you know, if we're about equality, why do we have to now put lesbians first in the acronym? Surely if it's going to be, why shouldn't it be alphabetical, BLGT? You know, the poor bi people really get a raw deal a lot of times, I think. But anyway,
they can speak up.
I know.
Yeah, we have them on the show. They can speak up too.
Good, good, good. But no, it's really, really exciting, and I'm, you know, I'm thrilled, and I want us to, you know, just really be very strategic in how we do this. We've got to do it right. So, yeah.
Now, you're busy doing a lot of other things, too.
Yeah.
Now, just in general, as I mentioned, I've known you for many years through the Human Rights Campaign.
Yeah.
But you've been doing a lot of other things. What else are you involved in?
Well, you know, this month I'm celebrating my 10-year anniversary of being in Houston.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I think most people know that I originally came here because I was married to a man.
There's no accounting for
taste. Feel more sorry for him or me. But anyway, I left that relationship.
You still live here?
I think so. Oh, yeah, we don't have much communication anymore.
You can say hi to him if you
want. He may or may not be listening. But no, I left and came out in 2004, so I've lived here for 6 years longer as an out single woman than I was as a married girl. So it's been an incredible 10 years, and my first 6 years of living in Houston were in the nonprofit sector in fundraising, marketing, media, volunteer management, and then I worked for an oil and gas company for 14 months, and then I was with a bank for 2 years in corporate responsibility. So, but you know, I got to the point this year where I decided that I needed to make some changes because I couldn't cope with my fabulous job and the volunteer work. So I decided to quit my job to pursue my dreams. So, in a nutshell, it's been incredible. And the Human Rights Campaign really is my number one. Well, no, Fort Bend thing has to be my shared number one now too.
But before.
I mean, deep passion. I'm passionate about the Human Rights Campaign because we need all LGBT organizations. I don't think that anyone is better than anyone else, and we need everyone working at a different level, but we need to work together and be cohesive.
And let's be honest, there were some challenges with HRC in Houston.
Yes.
And you worked very hard to help that work out.
Thank you for acknowledging that. I did, because I really do firmly believe that the organization works in our best interests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we see something that we don't like anywhere in life, I feel it's important for us to talk about it and ask questions and not just be quick to judge and think, oh, that must be happening because of that. No, well, let's just sit down and find out, okay, so why did that organization do this? Mm-hmm. You know, because, and so I've been volunteering with HRC for about 5 years now, and I'm now National Federal Club Co-Chair. So that means that in addition to being Houston Federal Club Co-Chair, I help lead the 31 other cities across the nation that have federal clubs as well. And of course, federal club money, federal club is a donor recognition program. It's not a club per se. Mm-hmm. The money that is raised through the federal club goes to support the PAC, the Political Action Committee, to help elect fair-minded candidates, primarily at the federal but also at the state level. And it also goes to other lobbying efforts. And so, you know, federal club money is really critical to advancing LGBT equality. And it started about 30 years ago at $100 a month and has continued at that level ever since. So if you imagine, $100 30 years ago was very different to what $100 is today.
No kidding.
Well, and let's also put this in perspective. I mean, that is a lot of money to a lot of people.
It is.
But when you add all that money up, and HRC is probably the most successful GLBT organization, it's still small compared to some of the other sides.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. There's a chart that I saw recently, and if you look at the membership base of HRC is about 750,000 people, like for the whole of the United States. If you look at our opposition and those other organizations that essentially hate the LGBT community, they have millions and millions of supporters. And so, you know, although HRC raises a lot of money, you're right, Jack, compared to other organizations, it pales in comparison. And so that's why we have to be really strategic, again, with how we use that money and how we make it most effective. Mm-hmm. And I think that HRC has great supporters and then also faces a lot of criticism, but all organizations should. I mean, we need people to be questioning what we're doing to keep us, you know, to keep us alert and keep us on top of everything. But, you know, I'm proud to represent that organization, and I'm proud to also work with other organizations at the federal and state and the local level, because we all... Our end goal is equality, and we have different ways that we're chipping at it. And we need to be chipping in multiple directions to be able to get there.
Well, and you know, I haven't always been the biggest HRC supporter. Uh-huh. But, and as I said, there was problems, you know, years ago. But I think HRC in Houston is trying to reach out to the people of color.
Yes.
A lot more than a lot of other organizations are, and I give you a lot of credit and how you tried to work that out, and there's still things to be done, but you've made a lot of progress.
Thank you, and I have to give the kudos to Paul Guillory.
Yes.
Paul Guillory.
Yes, Paul's the hero.
Isn't he? I mean, he's amazing. And also with the Latino community as well, and also with women. And any women that are listening, please come volunteer with me. Because, you know, again, you know, studies show that any organization will fail if it doesn't become diverse and have diversity and inclusion.
That's right.
I mean, I remember there's Diversity Inc. Had an article a while ago that showed while some of the major banks, major corporations fail with when they don't have best practices in diversity and inclusion.
Well, thank you so much, Fiona. It's great. Give us the address again, how they can get in touch with you concerning the Fort Bend LGBT political caucus.
That email address is fblgbt_political_caucus@yahoo.com. If you just search Fort Bend Political Caucus in Facebook, you'll find it. And Fiona Dawson, Fiona like the princess in Shrek, Dawson like Dawson's Creek, you'll find me in Facebook too. And we'd love to have anyone help and get involved.
Thank you. We've been talking with Fiona Dawson, founder of the Fort Bend LGBT Political Caucus and socialite extraordinaire and my personal friend. This is Queer Voices.
Welcome to Queer Voices, and this is J.D. Doyle and a mini edition of my show, Out Radio. You can hear the whole show and more at www.outradio.com. but this will give you a taste of it. And a bit of electro-synth pop by Haberdashery. The song was called To Become One, with two spelled T-W-O, and it comes from the CD Valence. Haberdashery is really Stephen Perlman, and he also released a very Eraser-influenced Christmas EP, but you'll have to wait until December for that one. I just love this next artist, and about everyone I know says the same thing. Her name is Sonia, and back in the late 80s, she was in an act called Disappear Fear. She went on to release a number of wonderful CDs just going by Sonia, and now her latest CD is billed as Sonia and Disappear Fear. It's called Splash, and from it I chose By My Silence.
One, two... When they came for the communists, I held my tongue. Like a good neighbor, I minded my own business and trusted justice was done. I didn't ask what was their crime. It was their sadness, it was not mine. I didn't care where they were sent. By my silence, I gave my consent. By my silence, gave my gift. with stars, herded like cattle into boxcars and then taken away. I didn't ask what was their crime. It was their sadness. It was not mine. I didn't care where they were sent. By my silence, I gave my consent. By my silence, I gave my consent. Now there's nobody left to speak out for me. At the time, I believed it never happened to me. I didn't know just what it meant. By your silence, you give your consent. By your silence, you give your consent. By your silence, you give your consent.
That song was called Sirius, and it's from the CD Honky Tonk Angel by the New Zealand act The Top Twins. And changing the pace considerably will be a UK act called Placebo. They formed in 1996, and the song For What It's Worth is from their sixth album, Battle for the Sun. Placebo is led by Brian Molko, and the band is quite popular in the UK, and they have frequently opened for David Bowie in concert.
The end of the century, I said my goodbyes. For what it's worth, I always aim to please, but I nearly died. For what it's worth, come on, lay with me.
your eyes for what it worth. God-shaped hole tonight. For what it's worth. 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 When you're out on the street, picking up the pieces to make ends meet. No one cares when you're down in the gutter. Got no friends, got no lover. No one cares when you're out on the street, picking up the pieces to make ends meet. No one cares when you're down in the gutter. Got no friends, got no lover. Friends got no lover.
Again, this is J.D. Doyle, and closing this mini edition of Out Radio is the band Gossip. And I figure that's fitting, as its lead singer, Beth Ditto, is a hard act to follow. Here's the title track from their 2006 CD, Standing in the Way of Control.
Who you are, your hands are grinding, it's time to give in here. Renowned investigative reporter Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, The Dark Side of the All-American Meal, will appear at the Progressive Forum Thursday, September 30th at the Wortham Center. Information and tickets are available at progressiveforumhouston.org. The event is produced in association with Urban Harvest. Eric Schlosser's Fast Food Nation helped start a revolution in the way Americans think about what they eat. Eric Schlosser also co-produced the Oscar-nominated documentary Food Incorporated, a fierce indictment of our industrialized food agricultural system and the consequences for our health, environment, and worker rights. Don't miss Eric Schlosser at the Wortham Center. Tickets and information are at progressiveforumhouston.org. That's progressiveforumhouston.org. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, Texas.
This is Queer Voices.
If you start to move, you might miss a sneak peek of Each Hit and I later in this half hour. Say, I'd like a salty pimp, please, in public. How about adding toppings like olive oil, sea salt, and wasabi pea dust to your soft serve? Where else but at New York City's Big Gay Ice Cream Truck? This way out, Sherry Lund got the scoop from the truck's co-founder, Doug Quint.
We're standing on a busy street corner in Union Square in New York City with Doug Quint, the owner and founder of the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck. Today in New York City was hot and muggy, and in my travels past this truck today, many, many lines around the corner. Now, the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck sits about a block away from anti-gay Bible-thumping protesters on the other end of Union Square. So, Doug, before we start talking about that, tell me a little bit about why you founded the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck.
Well, it all just was a strange alignment of circumstances and timing. Mainly, it was because I was looking for a strange summer job, and I'm a professional bassoon player. I play in whatever orchestra hires me, and I travel all over the East Coast. And especially in the summer, you run from festival to festival. And I've always done that. I've done that since I was in high school, going to music camp and then to professional festivals. And last summer I thought, well, maybe I'll just stay in New York and do something. I don't know. Maybe I'll be an exterminator. Who knows? Maybe I'll just write the great American novel. And one day I logged into Facebook and my friend's status message said, if you want to drive an ice cream truck, get in touch with me. And, you know, it was all too weird. It just seemed fortuitous. It seemed to present itself in front of me. So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to drive an ice cream truck this summer. Who wouldn't? That's how.
And so what kind of reaction have you had from your rainbow-colored ice cream cone on the side of your truck?
All good. Almost entirely elation from people. A lot of them walk by and they see the banner that says Big Gay Ice Cream Truck on it, and they have to say the five words out. Five words, right? Yeah. They have to say it out loud because it's so strange to them. So they all say it, and then they get this quizzical look on their face, and then they just burst out into laughter, which is exactly the right reaction. That's what I'm after.
You have some interesting flavors that you have. I personally had the salty pimp today, which is a big gob of vanilla ice cream covered in salty chocolate with caramel.
Yep.
What other flavors you have here?
Well, the flavors of ice cream are real basic stuff. It's vanilla, chocolate, and twist. So it's not really so much about the flavors of ice cream, it's about how we dress it up. So all these ice cream trucks in New York have exactly the same menu with the different sprinkles. So, yeah, we, you know, we had the chance to get a big ice cream machine, and we thought, well, we're going to put olive oil on it, you know, and peppermint syrup, and line our cones with Nutella, things like that. Yeah, wasabi. Whatever strikes our fancy, we'll try it out and see if it works.
So basically the big gay gourmet ice cream truck.
Yeah, I don't think my boyfriend and I, or I really think of ourselves as gourmets, but we... He's a pretty daring eater, and I am I'm willing to try. And it got to the point last summer where we started seeing everything as whether it would go on ice cream or not. You know, we would walk the grocery store trying to plan a meal for ourselves, and everything that we saw was either an ice cream topping or not an ice cream topping. So it got impossible to just plan a menu. Everything revolved around ice cream to us.
So for our listeners, how can they find you?
Well, you know, most people find us by tracking us on Twitter, at Big Gay Ice Cream. But also, there's a Facebook group, Big Gay Ice Cream Truck. There's a website, biggayicecreamtruck.com. You know, it's kind of hard to not find us. Just go to Google and type a few words. And when I started the truck, if you type Big Gay Ice Cream Truck in quotes, the only thing you came to was our T-shirt store. And now there are something like, you know, 250,000 hits to do with us. It's pretty ridiculous. So we're not hard to find at all.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Doug Quint at the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund. This is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
We've got a full-length first, a filthy Dragapella fifth, and a dance beat debut in this edition of Audiophile.
Insane!
I'm so old.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
These dudes got me over it. Take my love, run over it. I don't need it, you won't get it, 'cause I'm over it. These dudes got me over it. Take my love, run over it. I don't need it, you won't get it, 'cause I'm over it.
Anya Elite is a singer and activist from Atlanta, and he's just released his first full-length album. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. This album is called Sneak Preview, and it's definitely out-of-the-closet hip-hop.
On this album, it's called Sneak Preview, I combine my love for singing and rapping to create what I call homo hip-hop. I think it was important to do this because there's a lack of openly gay music that's commercially viable. And even though I'm gay, I make music for everyone because I think that music is a universal language.
Everywhere I go, people wanna know who you are. Who you are.
Baby, knock down, knock down, knock down, knock down. Yeah, that's
Find out more about the album Sneak Preview at www.myspace.com/AnyeElite. And that's spelled AnyeElite.
When I get a brand new hairdo and my eyelashes all a curl, I float like the clouds on hairdo. I enjoy being a macho, macho man. I'd like to be a macho man, macho, macho man. I like to be a macho. Kick line, and 3, 4.
Macho, macho man.
I gotta be a macho. Gotta be
a macho man.
I gotta be.
The Kinsey Six are America's favorite Dragapella Beauty Shop Quartet. Their website says so, and we agree, because this is the fifth time we featured them. Their new album is called, and we got to be careful here, Each Hit and I. And it has a wicked sense of humor, according to Erwin Keller, also known as Winnie.
The new album is, I think, the most fun and the filthiest CD we have ever released. It is more fun for Square Inch than any of the others. And not only is all the music on it really fun and fabulous, the CD comes with your own pair of Kinsey 6 decoder glasses with which you can find secret messages in the booklet. What more could you want?
Superstar, do you know where you're going? When did you stop your singing and start hoeing? Everybody else can see you're less artist than industry, but you are what you are, baby. Who's in charge? Do you know you've been set up? They don't care if you're so high you can't get up. They need you to make the cash from peddling the trash that got you where you are. There you are, baby.
Meet an adult supervisor.
Britney Spears and you can learn about the latest CD by the Kinsey Six at www.kinsey6.com. And six is S-I-C-K-S.
Album by Jason Antone is called Start to Move, and if you're on the dance floor, you'll do just that.
Start to Move is my debut album. It's an electronic pop album featuring different tempos and genres and styles of dance music, everything from mid-tempo to ballads to fast dance tracks. I have two singles released from it. First one, To the Limit, which is a mid-tempo hip-hop electronic dance song. Second single, Ooh Ooh Ooh, is just a fun get your butt on the dance floor dance song, and I think you should check it out.
Welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior.
For information about Start to Move, the debut album by Jason Antone, go to www.jasonantone.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. Find out more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trenton. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack at queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Renowned investigative reporter Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, The Dark Side of the All-American Meal, will appear at the Progressive Forum Thursday, September 30th at the Wortham Center. Information and tickets are available at progressiveforumhouston.org. The event is produced in association with Urban Harvest. Eric Schlosser's Fast Food Nation helped start a revolution in the way Americans think about what they eat. Eric Schlosser also co-produced the Oscar-nominated documentary Food Incorporated, a fierce indictment of our industrialized food agriculture system and the consequences for our health, environment, and worker rights. Don't miss Eric Schlosser at the Wortham Center. Tickets and information are at progressiveforumhouston.org. That's progressiveforumhouston.org. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, Texas.
Hello, KPFT. My name is Tiffany Poost, and I am excited and delighted to be running for the local station board. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I am a new Houstonian. I moved here in January of 2009, started working with local theater companies. My goal is to work as a community liaison between local theater artists, local performing artists,